MC Lob Shear, the host of the Cash Flow Ninja podcast and also the president and chief wealth and investment strategist of Producers Wealth, where we help our clients integrate cash flow banking, also known as infinite banking, with their business and investments. If you're interested in learning more about how we create strategies that integrate cash flow banking and investments to turbocharge them, you can access a video series at yourownbankingsystem.com. That's yourownbankingsystem.com.
Welcome to the Cashflow Ninja, the podcast sharing how to create income streams and manage, multiply, and protect your wealth in the new economy. Here is your host inside the dojo, MC Laubscher.
Hello, Cashflow Ninjas. MC Lobster here, and welcome to another episode of the Cashflow Ninja. I have a great show for you today. In today's show, we're going to look at the truth about cash flow investments. Joining me on the show today is returning guest Buck Joffrey. Buck is an accomplished surgeon, entrepreneur, asset manager, and podcaster. He's also the number one best-selling author of The 7 Secrets of Eternal Wealth. With a negative net worth upon finishing his surgical training in 2008, Buck quickly became a serial entrepreneur and real asset investor, amassing an eight-figure net worth. In order to help his high-paid professional colleagues, he started a financial education website called thewealthformula.com and host the popular Wealth Formula podcast. Buck knows the old mantra of investing in a diversified portfolio of stocks, bonds, and mutual funds is outdated and dangerous for high-paid professionals given the volatility and instability of the current global economy. Therefore, he advocates entrepreneurship and or investing in hard assets that provide cash flow as a more reliable way of approaching personal finance. Through a strong foundation of financial education and emphasis on cash flow investing, Buck teaches professionals how to take charge of their money and prosper.
Are you an investor looking for passive cash flow but don't have the time to explore your options? Discover Real Estate. It's the best option for passive income that savvy investors have been turning to for years to generate income and build wealth. But the reality is, real estate investing takes expertise, market knowledge, and time. So what do you do if you don't have the time or market knowledge? Discover how many business investors have found a way to generate cash flow from real estate investing. Their secret? They partner with proven private real estate investment funds. Four Peaks Capital Partners have created a system that allows accredited investors the opportunity to invest in undervalued assets to generate passive income and capital gains. Invest with the cash flow experts and sit back while Four Peaks does all the work. Call Four Peaks Capital Partners at 877-5-INCOME. That's 877-5-INCOME, or go to privateincomeinvesting.com. An offer to buy or sell securities is only made by a private placement memorandum. Prospective investors must read the PPM in its entirety before making an investment decision.
Joining me back on the Cashflow Ninja podcast is Dr. Buck Joffrey. Buck, great to have you back on the show.
Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah. So long time since we've spoken and had the pleasure of having you on the show. Could you share just a little bit about your background and journey for my listeners that's not familiar with Buck Joffrey and also what you've been up to?
Yeah. So just as a reminder, I am a board certified surgeon. I finished my residency in 2008 and for the most part retired about 2 or 3 years ago, just kind of played around a little bit, but so my career was very short. I had 34 years of training and probably about a 5-year full-time career, and then I sort of phased into the world of entrepreneurship, investing heavily into real estate and a variety of other businesses that I started and other asset classes in which I invested. So at this point, that was in Chicago, by the way, where I did all that. I moved to Santa Barbara since we last talked, because this is where I wanted to end up. At this point, I wouldn't call it a retirement because I don't really believe in retirement, but I'm here in Santa Barbara and I'm full-time investor and podcaster, and it's just been a lot of fun.
Fantastic. What was that switch
from all this training that you're doing and you're preparing for basically practicing medicine, right? Being a physician. And then all of a sudden there's a switch and a turn to entrepreneurship, and that you just decide to take a completely different path than what you have before. Share a little bit about that moment.
Well, the moment for me, I make no, there's no mistake in my mind where it happened. It was, I got married the day after I finished my residency, 2008. My wife and I went on our honeymoon to Puerto Vallarta. On the way back in a dingy airport, I found the Cashflow Quadrant from Robert Kiyosaki. It was like a lightning struck me at that point, and it really just opened my eyes up to the idea of being my own boss and in this world of entrepreneurship, which, you know, I never even thought about. I was your classic, you know, guy who school and A's and best colleges, best med schools and residencies and, you know, neurosurgery and, you know, I did everything that you can imagine in terms of being that good student. And so that really opened my eyes. And I will say that what Robert's book did for me, and Robert's been on my show too, and we've talked about this, is what it did for me is really just kind of create a different paradigm of seeing the world. One that I never understood and one that I never really thought about, but I found incredibly exciting and liberating, right? It was all of a sudden like I was free. I had this whole world that I didn't even know existed. And that's where it all changed. Now, the challenge for me, like it is for a lot of people, is they have their purple book moment, right? And they are so inspired and they're like telling everybody, you know what? There's this thing called passive income. I don't know if you know about it. You know, they just go running around telling everybody about it. But the problem is that at the end of the day, Cashflow Quadrant and all of Robert's books, as genius as they are, they don't necessarily give you the roadmap, right? So a lot of us are sort of in that position where we're like, okay, now what next? Now, particularly for me, it was a unique situation because I was not broke, right? And a lot of, you know, talking to Robert Kiyosaki, he'll tell you right off, the rich dad, poor dad was really targeted at the masses. You know, it was targeted for everybody. I didn't speak the language of everybody, right? And so I need to figure out where does this book, how does it translate to me? And as a physician who was making, at that point, mid six figures, you know, by starting my own business and seven figures, ultimately, that was very different than it would be for somebody who was reading it who made no money.
Right.
So that's ultimately what led to my podcast, because I, you know, went down this road to create my own roadmap. And then I kind of felt like I should share it with others, because I couldn't tell you how many people I met who were in the same situation. They lived by, they were inspired by Kiyosaki's work. And then they said, now what? And then it kind of let it go. Right. And so that's where my podcast came in.
Yeah, you make a great point, because there's a lot of different money problems, right? The first part is some people struggle to make money. You have to make money. You have to protect money, right? And you have to multiply. So, and then there's folks like, especially when it comes to physicians and high income earners, they make a lot of money, but then the protection and the multiplication is missing in that equation. And to your point, though, too, from an education perspective, academic and professional education is very valued, of course, too. When it comes to financial education, not so much. So a lot of those very high income earners, they have the academic and the professional education, but not necessarily the financial education.
Yeah, and that's true. I mean, but you know, at the end of the day, I mean, really, who does have this education, right? I mean, if you have an accounting degree, you probably have the education. But I met plenty of MBAs and, you know, people in finance who, when they think about this world and they're exposed to the world that you and I talk about, they have an aha moment too. So I think the challenge for the high paid professional, the really academic people like doctors and stuff who've gotten A's and succeeded all along is, and I said this, you know, by the way, in my interview with Robert Kiyosaki, this is one of the things I said to him. I said, Robert, do you think it's harder for somebody who's highly successful to break out of the golden handcuffs, to break away from this sort of traditional, conventional financial wisdom than it is for somebody who's not had that much success?
Yep.
He's never really thought about it. But I'll tell you for sure, that is 100% true. Because guys like me, we're used to success. We're used to getting A's and people telling us we're doing the right thing and society telling us, wow, that's cool. You're a brain surgeon. That's awesome. Right?
And yeah.
We kept getting these dopamine hits of positive reinforcement. For what, though? For doing what somebody else told us to do. Somebody else taught us how to do. It yep. wasn't for us creating something for ourselves or thinking outside the box. So it becomes increasingly difficult with higher levels of conventional success to become unconventionally wealthy.
It's so true. And to your point, I have an MBA. There was no financial freedom class in high school that I could go to. There was no financial freedom class in university right. or as part of my MBA curriculum. There was no financial freedom course. Hey, take this, you know. So it absolutely is. And where we are at today, I know you and I had spoken a little bit before, and philosophy change. We keep learning, which is what we love to do. And also from a cash flow perspective, you've seen some different forms of cash flow being generated from different asset classes. You also monitor a lot of different areas and niches. What are some of the things that you've seen? What are some of the things that you've learned on your journey? And what are some of the different takes that you've experienced lately, or some of the changes in your thinking around cash flow in particular that you've experienced?
Well, I'm sure you guys talk a lot and about different ways of creating cash flow, and you know, I'm definitely a real asset guy for the most part of this. You know, we talk a little bit about crypto later, but for the most part, you know, this is my world, and I think that for me, you know, rather than go into specific types of investments, I would just kind of, I think it's probably a good idea to talk about something that I think is that people don't think about too much who start getting excited about cash flow, which is, I think sometimes, and this is almost going to be anathema for your listeners, but looking at cash flow alone is not the right thing to do. And of course, I'm a cash flow guy. I am a cash flow guy. But here's the problem. There's a lot of people out there looking for cash flow. But looking for cash flow without looking at the entire picture is very dangerous. Let me give you an example. So I just sold a building. I just closed a building Monday, and I owned it for 3 or 4 years. And I was getting probably, you know, I was getting pretty good returns. I was probably 15% cash on cash per year. And that's great, right? I was happy with that. But here's what happened. At the end of, so on Monday, I only owned this building for 3.5, 4 years. I sold it for a 500% return. Okay. So I'm pretty excited about that. Right. So the structure on that was cool, right? I was making cash flow, and then there was another option for me to have a liquidity moment. And then now guess what? If I put that same money into something else, which is a similar model, it's going to be much bigger. And the liquidity moment for that will be significant as well. So that's an interesting model. But the problem is that people get so hung up in the idea of cash flow. I said I was getting 15%. Say I was getting 10%. I'd still be happy if I made 500% on, you know, the liquidation moment. But here's where it gets challenging. Some people are looking at just cash flow. And so what if I said to you, hey, you can either have 10% return or you can have 25% return. Which one are you going to take?
Right.
Well, it depends. That's the answer. Mm-hmm. Because what if I said, okay, yeah, well, the 10% return one is basically a real estate asset that at some point you'll have a liquidity moment and you'll make a bunch of money and it's an appreciating asset. The other one, let's say 25%. Well, let's say this one just goes on for 7 years and then it's dead. So mm-hmm. what happened? For 4 years, you just got your money back.
Yep.
And then you made money for 3 years and then it died. Right, so we got to be really careful. We need to look at things holistically. And I think that's one of the challenges, because people get super excited about cash flow and they miss the forest for the trees. Along that lines, you know, there's another concept I think is that to me is important, because one of the most common questions that I get is, okay, hey Buck, you know, I've got, you know, a couple hundred thousand dollars sitting in here, and I really like to turn this into as much cash flow as possible and retire, you know, quickly. How am I going to do that? Because if I do the math and I say I'm averaging a 10% cash on cash return, well, gosh, I'm making a lot more money than, you know, $20,000 a year, which is what I would get from putting that $200,000 into something. So another concept that I think is really important is that, you know, I have this whole equation, which is wealth equals the product of mass, which is the money you put in, velocity, how quickly you get your money back, and velocity and leverage, right? What we really ought to be paying attention to sometimes is how quickly we get our money back, right? Mm-hmm. Because there's two ways to increase the amount of money that you have circulating in your investments. One is just to keep making more and more of it, which is great. It's just, sometimes it's just harder work. The other is to look at your investments and say, how can I get this initial capital back in my pocket, have that asset still working on its own, and then redeploy it somewhere else. It's like recycling capital. And this is something that I've been doing a lot of, which a lot of people don't think of. So those are two concepts that I think are potentially very useful to people.
Yeah, you make a couple of great points there. I also talk a lot about holistic wealth creation these days, because I think we're so focused just on, again, that small portion of our money that's put at work, we kind of forget about the entire picture and all the moving pieces. And another point to add to the point that you're already making on cash flow is also back to the cash flow quadrant that you mentioned. What's the efficiency of the cash flow, right?
Yeah.
Where does it fit in from a tax standpoint? How is it treated there? Because not every cash flow stream is equal as well, right? And right. The other thing about banks, if you look at what banks are doing, you know, the quicker the money comes back, they did deploy it again. So it's putting your money into an investment, as you were just saying, and trying to get that capital back as quickly as possible to keep moving. So you want it to be moving effectively through asset classes, and generate the correct and efficient cash flow at the same time. So those are all very, very powerful points.
Right. I mean, it's really about velocity, right? I mean, I know you, and velocity and leverage, right? And I know you talk a lot about that. And I think, you know, the infinite banking concept that you know, that you and I both are big fans of is certainly one way to increase both velocity and leverage too. So I think that, you know, the thing that I am seeing a lot of out there is that people are, you know, syndicators, and they're not nefarious by any means, but everybody, listen, people are raising capital, want to raise capital, and they're smart. They start looking at what people want, right? That's what they want. They want high cash on cash. So you just got to be careful. You may be putting something in looking at cash on cash, but then you have to look at, I prefer to look at annualized returns of a given investment. You know, particularly if I can, you know, get something where what I call is an infinite return model, that's really what I'm shooting for. So.
Yeah, the infinite return model, you've talked quite a bit and touched on it quite a bit. And, one of the things that I also wanted to talk, you've mentioned syndications and so forth, and due diligence is something we've been talking about quite a bit right now as well. Yeah. Can you share your thoughts a little bit of where we are in this market cycle? Because I'm starting to see a lot of, I'm starting to see a lot of stuff out there the same as the last go around. Where do you think we are in the market cycle? What are some of your thoughts on due diligence and some of the stuff to be careful for and cautious about out there?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're probably ninth inning. We might even be past a little bit in the ninth inning. We might be sort of headed down a little bit. And which is why I'm selling, you know, I'm selling my personal assets. I think the this is something that you got to think about carefully if you're investing in syndications in particular. Now, if you're investing in, you know, single family homes, or maybe it's, you know, some other kind of, you know, four units or less type property, whatever. But if you're investing in syndications, one of the biggest thing that you have to be concerned about, in my view right now, is over leveraging. Okay. Now, why do I say that? It's because people don't understand, a lot of people don't understand that even if you're cash flowing in a property, you can still have a capital call. That is something that people are just forgetting. And there are so many people out there, you know, there's groups out there who are, you know, you've got, I'm a software engineer full time, but I am syndicating this building in Dallas for, you know, and raising $4 million of capital. And I'm just going to rely on inflation to, you know, to make this, I'm going to buy it at a capitalization rate of five, you know, cap rate of five, and it's C-class building. So, okay. So even if you cash flow, all it is going to take is some decompression in your cap, in the cap rates. It doesn't have to go from 5 to 10. It can go to 5 to 6. And if you have not done enough to drive equity into your property at that point, you're going to have a capital call. Why? Because this is how loans work, right? This is how loans work in the non-recourse world. About every 18 months, there's an appraisal, whether you ask for it or not. The bank does it. And you might have bought something and you're humming along, you're cash flowing, your investors are happy, and the bank says, hey, You owe us $1 million, or we're taking the property back. And you say, well, why? I'm cash flowing. And then they point at your loan documents, the loan covenants. They say, well, we were only supposed to give you 80% leverage on this building. And hey, we know you're cash flowing, but right now the cap rate is 6, not 5. And according to what we have, your leverage is more than 80%. So you better give us some money. And that is something that I think is just, people are just forgetting this. This happened left and right in 2008. I remember Robert Kiyosaki himself telling me a story about how he had a building that was making tons of money every month. And he got a call from the bank and he was like, what? What do you mean I owe you money?
Right.
Right?
Yep.
So what do I mean by not over leveraging? Well, first, the most basic part of that is give yourself some cushion. If you have a loan covenant of that says they'll lend you up to 80%, maybe you should only take 70%. Or you should take, and or you take that property, know that you're going to drive in equity from day one. So if you're increasing net operating income in a property, guess what? You are deleveraging. And so those are things that you can still do and make money in this economy. The key is that I think the trajectory of real estate, I think because of inflation, et cetera, is going to go up. I mean, I don't, over time.
Yep.
But again, we have to use a regression line, right? Things are going to go up and down. We just have to be smart about it. And the thing that you have to be careful about is you're stress testing things and saying you're not going to lose a property, because that would be the worst scenario.
You're listening to Buck Joffrey on the Cashflow Ninja podcast. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
Life settlement investments have allowed financial and banking institutions to not only buy their equity contractually, but also diversify their capital from any economic, market, and geopolitical risk. It's been part of the $1 billion blueprint, followed by institutional investors. And if you're an accredited investor, you can also now participate in this vehicle with enormous growth potential. You can watch an informational webinar presented by one of the premier organizations providing life settlement investments, Penumbra Solutions, at cashflowninja.com/life settlements.
Blockchain technologies and cryptocurrencies will not only disrupt money, but every industry on the planet. These new innovations and technologies will affect every area of your life in the future. The cryptocurrency course teaches you everything that you need to know about getting started,
and profiting with cryptocurrencies and includes expert training from the top crypto experts in the world. You'll learn how to buy, sell, and trade cryptocurrencies, how to safely store your crypto, how to become a sound investor, even if you're just a beginner, and how to apply blockchain technology to your business. You can watch a free crypto masterclass and grab the crypto course at cashflowninja.com/crypto course.
You're listening to Buck Joffrey on the Cashflow Ninja podcast, and I'm back to our interview.
And constantly looking at your assets, how they're positioned, your savings and so forth. What are some of the things that you're and the steps that you're taking to positioning yourself to be on the right side of a possible correction or recession and not only thrive, but also survive in it?
Well, I mean, from the standpoint of, I am certainly keeping a fair amount of cash, a lot more cash than I would ordinarily keep on the sidelines. But the other thing is, again, going back to that idea of where do you invest? I deal primarily with one partner, and they have a very unique loan where the loan covenant is basically 100% LTV, right? They never take 100% LTV. They're taking 72, 73, and they're driving net operating income. But for me, again, I am not concerned about losing money if I am in a solid asset with a very experienced team. I just need to make sure we're not over leveraging. So if you can get 100% LTV and only take 70%, you're pretty safe. So right. That's the way I'm doing it. Now, the other thing, those are the major things. And of course, some of the things when I say cash, I mean, you certainly can use your infinite banking stuff. You know, I mean, you're going to still be making 5% plus, pretty much guaranteed. We don't like those words, but pretty much guaranteed. And you can wait on the sidelines and feel like your money's still growing. So I think there's a lot of things you can do. I think the key is, especially when markets like this, there's a lot of me toos out there right now. They're not being nefarious necessarily, but there's a lot of people getting in the game in the ninth inning and don't know what they're doing. And they're raising a lot of capital. And I think you're going to see a lot of those properties become available to the pros in, you know, within a couple of years.
Yeah, I have to say that this is a very interesting just observation. It's interesting to observe this. Speaking about getting into the ninth inning, another interesting observation in human psychology was December last year. Following the crypto markets, we've been talking it on the show for quite a bit, and seeing this build up and then seeing I wouldn't go as far as saying the masses, but seeing a lot of folks storming into crypto, chasing that last kind of little bit up. But again, a lot of folks weren't very well educated in crypto, didn't understand it. This is not like a stock portfolio that you just open up, buy a bunch of positions and just click sell, right? When it goes down, these exchanges have never handled that type of volume. I still remember, I'm getting this email from Coinbase that I opened up my email and Coinbase sends out an email saying something to the effect that please invest responsibly. You know, sell everything right now, right?
So, when your barber starts talking about Bitcoin, it becomes a little bit of an issue.
Exactly. So it was a very interesting observation. I know that you've spoken about crypto as well. What are some of the stuff that excites you about this space? What are some of the stuff that you've been seeing kind of monitoring this space and this niche closely?
So first of all, positioning, this is important because I think even my wife was really concerned about this for me. She's like, your whole ethos is real assets, cash flow, creating wealth through, you know, the things that families have done for centuries. Where does crypto fit into this, dummy? Right? And I'll start by saying this, is that every once in a while in history, you have a moment that there's a seismic shift in what's happening in the world and with technology, et cetera. And I recognize those, you know, the most recent one was the internet. And I think we're seeing another movement. We're seeing it basically new internet. And that's what we're seeing with blockchain and distributed ledger technology, not only just a new internet, but, you know, basically a peer-to-peer world, which is a new world. It's a completely different world. So to me, this is the advantage of having a little extra money. As you called it, beer money. I have called it with my listeners because we have a lot of accredited investors, and I actually had a, you know, some investment things going on myself. Yeah. In this, I call it, you know, BMW money or Maserati money. And the idea being that this is a chance for you to take a massively asymmetric bet. You should not bet your entire life savings on this world, but if you were going to buy something that is guaranteed to have no value in a few years, like, for example, a brand new BMW, or Maserati that you drive off the lot, let's skip that for a year and let's look at this as an asymmetric risk. You say to yourself, I could lose everything, which I don't think you're going to, but I could, or this could be one of the best investments of my life. That's an asymmetric risk. And I think particularly for people who have a little extra money on the side to use, having, you know, 5-10% of whatever, and for me it's about 10% now, this is one of those moments. I mean, listen, when the dot-coms came and Amazon started and Google was started, I was in medical school. I had no money, zero money, right? And I feel like I missed out. For me, this is like, you know, it's still early in this area. And I think there's going to be an enormous amount of wealth created. Right. So the question is, do you want to have potentially some exposure to this market? Now, that's for me, that's a positioning standpoint. Now, understanding that in any situation like this, it's a good idea to try to educate yourself, right? And you know, we were, I think I was mentioning to you before, I'm finding myself so interested in this just because it is like so fascinating to me. And I'm finding that my own audience is interested, that I'm actually starting a new podcast focusing just on cryptocurrency called Cryptonomics Radio, which probably will be live by the time this is running. But I think it's a great opportunity. I think what to me, it's what's really exciting about it is we're creating a peer-to-peer world that doesn't exist. It's what the internet should have been.
Right.
Right? But it, yep. It wasn't. All the internet ended up doing was taking our day-to-day transactions and making them digital, but it didn't take it to that next level, which was to create this peer-to-peer world.
Yeah, you make a lot of good points, and I like how you look at it overall, where I think a lot of people are just so focused on one aspect of it, right? The Bitcoin, the cryptocurrency, but there's all these other moving parts. And as you mentioned, it's truly a new internet we're in the process of creating right now. And you look at decentralized blockchain technology driven websites and social media websites like Steemit already.
Right.
You're seeing a lot of very, very interesting things on there. And especially now what's happening on with regards to social media, with regards to censorship and algorithms and, you know, all of the latest scandals that Mark Zuckerberg and all these guys are in, I think more and more people are going to start gravitating to it. And this is just only going to accelerate the interest in these other aspects of blockchain technology.
You know, to me, MC, this is not an if, it's a when. I mean, let's just be clear here, and to the extent that the guys like Jamie Dimon and, you know, some of these other people are acting as if it's a fraud, they call it a fraud, and then they have their traders go buy a bunch in the background and try to patent blockchain technologies themselves.
Yep.
Let's just not listen to them. Let's look at what's happening. As you and I both know, we have right now an enormous amount of movement in the institutional world. Wall Street is creating the highway, the infrastructure on which they can come on and off as we speak. Goldman has a trading desk, or I think, I don't know if they've started it, but they were going to Goldman Sachs. We have, as you know, we've had 9 ETFs or maybe 11 ETFs now that have been rejected, but we have a big one coming up that's actually sponsored by the Chicago Board of Options and Exchange. This is not the Winklevoss twins, right? This is a big deal. We have the Intercontinental Exchange. The owner of the New York Stock Exchange has created something called BACT. I'm sure you've heard of BACT.
Yep.
Which is going to not only allow you to buy your Starbucks at Bitcoin, but it's also going to allow institutional trading over the counter. This stuff is being created. It's not being created if this is an industry that's going to die, like they all say when you talk to them, right? If it was going to die, why would you be dumping millions and millions, hundreds of millions of dollars in infrastructure for this? And so, again, I just look at it and I say, hey, I could be wrong. And if I am, the money I've put into this at this point, it's not going to hurt me. But man, there is such an opportunity for incredible amounts of wealth to transfer that I think it's something to certainly learn about and consider.
Yeah, to your point, these guys have been quite amazingly deceptive with their own activities and what they're putting out in the media. And I think one of the reasons is they want to control this. They don't know quite yet how to control it. They're busy developing the control systems and how to get their arms around this. And up until that point, you know, they're going to bet every single ETF, until they get it right. And when they do get it right, then the floodgates will open up because they can control it and they can manage it and they can stand to profit from it.
Yeah, and to be clear, again, it's not, I mean, this is such a, this is like, you know, trying to fight this, I mean, even with the banks, et cetera, it's just not going to work because it's like it's like the war on terror, right?
Right.
What's the enemy, right? I mean, it's a movement. And what is fascinating and what has gotten me to the point where I want to do an entire podcast on this topic is that it's not just a technology moment. This is a social movement. And those people who are in this world right now are learning about it. That's one of the things that'll be striking. I've never seen anything like this, right?
Yep.
It's a world with a confluence of computer geeks and libertarians, very powerful, very smart people. And it's a technology that is so powerful that you just can't squash it.
Right. The network effect too, because it's just going to grow and grow in the adoption. It's been interesting to follow and see it. You know, there was a moment at the end of last year when people started realizing that this is what is there. A lot of people have kind of taken a step back after getting hurt by sticking their toe in the water, or as some folks, remortgaging their house, you know, because it made sense at that point when it's spiking up like that. But yeah. I think overall, to your point, I think there's a lot of exciting stuff ahead. I think, you know, I still remember growing up in South Africa and you would go into the internet and you would click on the internet, right? And the picture would like literally, it was so slow because it was dial-up that the picture would take like 5 minutes on our dial-up on the farm just to come up, and eventually there, you know. So where crypto is, I could kind of see a correlation and say there's just so much further to go. So people that say, well, you know, what about the technology? That would be me at that stage in South Africa saying, well, when are we going to be able to talk to each other through video on this computer? What is all this hype about, you know? Why can't I, you know, Zoom or Skype someone right now and talk to them? It's like this is all little paces and little steps. But as you mentioned, it's very, very exciting to see the development, the energy, the resources, and the enthusiasm that's in the place.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Buck, where can my listeners learn more about you? Where can they reach out to you? Where can they follow you? And what are, I would say, where are some of the hubs that they can access your other podcast, the Wealth Formula, and then also the Cryptonomics Radio podcast, which should be very exciting.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's obviously, yeah. So Wealth Formula Podcast is the one that's been around for a while now. And that's where we, you know, we talk about a lot of the, I guess, bread and butter investing. And, you know, wealthformula.com, you know, you certainly find me there. But, you know, this whole crypto thing is new. And I suspect, like I said, that it'll be live by the time this plays, but it'll be again available on iTunes, Stitcher, the whole nine yards, probably YouTube as well. Yep. And it'll be cool. Cryptonomics Radio. I've already got some really, you know, cool guests just from people who've been on Wealth Formula, you know, like Mance Harmon from Hashgraph, and a lot of people are talking about Hashgraph and some of my other favorite projects. But what'll be neat about it, I think, is I'm going to take it from the beginning. There is so many people that I'm hoping just to get excited about this way. Whether they invest or not, it's something that's worth listening to. So hopefully, people will do that. So they can check that out as well.
Absolutely. And I would highly recommend, as always, that if you're going to get into it, learn, educate yourself. And the podcast seems to be a great vehicle for that, Buck. This has been a pleasure to connect again. As always, thank you so much for coming on the show, sharing your journey and your knowledge, and providing so much value for my listeners.
You got it. Anytime.
Are you having a hard time finding great investment properties? Unfortunately, the best deals are rarely found locally. Successful investing begins with the right properties in the right markets. Norada Real Estate provides everything you need to invest in the best deals across the United States. Our simple, proven system will help you create real wealth and passive monthly cash flow. Learn how to find the best deals by downloading your free copy of The Ultimate Guide to Passive Real Estate Investing at noradarealestate.com. That's noradarealestate.com.
Thank you for joining me again on the Cashflow Ninja. Thank you for all your support. You rock. If you like what you hear and appreciate what we're trying to build here at the Cashflow Ninja, please subscribe, rate, and review our show on iTunes and share our show with family, friends, and your network. If you're not a subscriber to our newsletter, you can sign up for our newsletter at cashflowninja.com or text Cashflow Ninja to 44222. I'm also posting daily videos on Facebook and YouTube, and we'll live stream weekly starting May 2018. To make sure you don't miss any of the live streams, please like and subscribe to my Facebook and YouTube platforms. I'm also dropping content on Instagram daily. Be sure to follow us on Instagram to get in on the action. I want to thank you for spending your most precious resource with me today, your time. That's our show for today. Until next time, live a life of passion and purpose on your terms. This presentation is for educational and informational purposes only. The information being presented and considered does not consider your particular financial objectives or situation, and it does not make personalized recommendations. This material is not intended to replace the advice of a qualified tax and legal advisor or other qualified professionals, and you should not use the information in place of a customized consultation with a licensed professional regarding your specific personal financial objectives, situation, and needs. We believe the information provided is reliable, but we do not guarantee its accuracy, timeliness, or completeness.